from the redwood forest, the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak Live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at www.thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to live shows or to our past shows on our iPod Ready Archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. Now, if you have a Nokia phone, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website for details. For the purpose of our listeners, we do have an 800 number, or a couple of them. I'm going to give them to you right now. 877-489-6350. And toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, it's 888-228-4494. We're particularly honored to have with us tonight an incredible man, Chris Wells, is the North American spokesperson for New Humanism, also known as Universal Humanism. He has been active in the humanist movement, and organized expression of New Humanism for the past 18 years. And like all New Humanists, Chris is a volunteer. Tonight's show is going to be about the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. This international march will be the first world march that will travel around the world asking for the end of wars, the dismantling of nuclear weapons, and for an end to all forms of violence, both physical, economic, racial, religious, cultural, sexual, and psychological. Our show tonight is dedicated to our own John Grogan, a dear friend of mine and a friend of our show. John is one of a dozen Canadian organizers in the march and has helped to bring the march to our show's attention. And for that, we thank you, John, because this is an incredible, incredible endeavor. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you very much for having me, Basma, and thank you for helping me to get the word out about this incredible initiative, the World March.
Well, wow. I, you know, one thing I do have to tell you, Chris, I don't understand why anybody would not encourage this. It's just an amazing, amazing event. Can you, first of all, explain to us what the World March for Peace and Nonviolence is and what it's about?
Sure. It's a really, you know, shaping up to be the biggest global march for peace and nonviolence in history. And it has a lot of different elements, one of which is a sort of a symbolic march, which begins in New Zealand, in Wellington, New Zealand, on October 2nd of this year, the International Day of Nonviolence. And that march will travel 99,000 miles across the entire planet and end in the Andes Mountains of Argentina on January of 2010. And at the same time that that's happening, there's going to be an enormous diversity of projects, initiatives, concerts, marches, events of all kinds taking place all over the planet to raise awareness about peace and nonviolence, about the urgent need for the abolition of nuclear weapons, and the need to build a new world based on nonviolence. That's sort of the march in a nutshell. There's many, many details, of course, that go along with that general picture. And it's really gaining an incredible reception from heads of state. It's been endorsed by 8 acting heads of state, by former heads of state, people like Jimmy Carter, also Nobel Prize winners, Bishop Desmond Tutu, very well-known writers and thinkers like Noam Chomsky, movie stars. And also is getting a lot of lots of initiatives are happening at the grassroots level, and that's a thing which is also really exciting about the march.
Well, understandably, this is an incredible event, and the enormity of it is going to take. Is there any estimation as to how many people are actually involved in the organization of this event?
Well, thousands of people are involved in the organization. I would say that you know, it's looking like there's going to be something like a million people involved directly in the march, in one of those events. And then we're not sure how many it will reach in other ways, through the website, through media attention, and that kind of those kind of things. It's very interesting the way the march is organized, because it's conceived around this idea of initiative. So rather than being a kind of one-size-fits-all approach where the organizers decide this is what the march is going to be, from the beginning, the idea was to open it to the initiatives of individuals, of organizations, groups, anyone really who's looking to move things in the direction of peace and nonviolence, and to express that in whatever way fits with them. So this is giving rise to a lot of creativity and a lot of diversity in the types of activities, and of course opening it to much wider participation. So it's a kind of a model of a converging diversity. That's the idea that we're looking for with this march, and to address issues which really affect all of us. You know, the danger of the proliferation of nuclear weapons and nuclear technology is something very urgent. It's I believe, the most urgent threat facing the world today, more urgent than global warming. And yet it's much less widely known, much less widely understood. Many people associate the nuclear weapons with the 80s or with the Cold War kind of confrontation between the U.S. and Russia. But it's actually very dangerous now, and this is something that affects all of us, young and old, rich and poor, doesn't matter what your politics are. So this is something that we think is very important to get the word out and to have that word reach as far as possible.
Well, let me ask you, let's backtrack a little bit. You've been involved for quite some time in the humanist...
Yes, that's right, in the humanist movement and new humanism.
In the humanist movement. Can you explain the humanist movement to us?
Yes, the humanist movement is a kind of a current of opinion, an organization which is worldwide, very grassroots and all volunteer, and which is the expression of... a current of humanism called New Humanism, which is different than humanism as many people in the States might understand it, as something which sometimes is specifically atheist. This is not atheist, and which is really most deeply concerned with issues of human rights, issues of active nonviolence, and proposing a deep fundamental transformation of society, which goes hand in hand with a personal transformation, and that transformation has to do with the ideals of nonviolence, transforming the political structures, transforming the economic relationships, so that there's progress for everybody, and so that we can begin to address the roots of all of the different types of violence that really are plaguing humanity.
Well, absolutely.
Part
of this, you know, this movement, and you were drawn into the, I guess it, you would have to be drawn into this kind of work if you are looking at a new humanist entity and or universal humanist lifestyle. You would have to be drawn into the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. What were your, you know, people a lot of times will say, well, if you have peace, naturally you have nonviolence. But they're not necessarily synonymous in the world, are they, Chris?
No, that's right. In fact, in a way you could say peace is the end result. And maybe nonviolence is how we get there, because many people are in favor of peace. But what is the road to get there? And in our view, active nonviolence is really fundamental as a way of looking at what's going on in the world, and also as a methodology of action. And, you know, we've seen very powerful examples of how active nonviolence can change things in very fundamental ways. The example of Gandhi, the Gandhi Indian independence movement, the work of Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement are the two most dramatic examples. And it really has to do with looking deeper and saying, well, there's physical violence, but in a sense, physical violence is the end result of a whole string of other types of violence that occur before that. Economic violence, for example, is an example we see every day in this world, where the spending on military spending on weapons and all that continues to go up, even though we're in the midst of a global economic crisis. And at the same time, 1 billion people, 1/6 of the world's population, is going hungry. So this is a type of economic system which is really violent.
Absolutely. There's absolutely no reason for human beings to be starving in a world where we throw out more food than we actually consume.
Exactly. We have the capacity, technologically, resources to feed everyone on the planet. In fact, to provide everyone on the planet with all of the basic things that they need to thrive, which every human being has a right to, just as by virtue of their being human. Education, housing, enough to eat, and reason to hope for their future. This is one of the core ideas of New Humanism, which is that we have to struggle for a world where there's equal opportunities for everybody, and that you can't have progress for just one small part of humanity. You have to have progress for everyone, if there's going to be progress for anyone. That's really
the actual initiative of the March for Peace and Nonviolence came out of A World Without Wars.
Yes,
which is an international organization. Are you affiliated with that as well? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Uh-huh. Exactly. And World Without Wars is one of the organizations which grew out of the humanist movement. And there are other organizations which deal with other themes. The World Without Wars is focusing on the issue of peace and disarmament, and has been working in that area for 15 years. And that's an international organization. And there are other ones which deal with themes like the relationships between cultures, one that's more having to do with sort of university level type of studies, the Center of Humanist Studies, and other organizations which have come from the humanist movement. So World Without Wars is based in Spain, and this is the organization which has been targeting this theme of peace and disarmament for many years, and came up with this brilliant, maybe somewhat crazy idea of a world march, which would bring these urgent issues to a much higher level of attention. In a way, what the march is aiming to do is to do for nonviolence what has already happened with the awareness of the environment, for example. Not very long ago, just a few decades ago, the environment was something that only a few specialists really understood the need to address that at a social level, and that's changed dramatically, and now it's something which is much more widely known. And what we're aiming for is a similar type of raising awareness or drawing attention to the urgent need to use nonviolence as a way to approach the problems of the world. We can no longer have this model where a nation or a people is imposing its will on others through the use of force. If there are disputes, they need to be resolved with diplomacy, with dialogue. And this is one of the things that the march is calling for, that countries renounce the use of war as a means of resolving conflicts. And this is something which is already in the constitution of some countries. Bolivia, for example, has that in its new constitution. The other things that the march is calling for are the abolition of nuclear weapons, the reduction of conventional forces, proportional reduction of conventional forces, and reduction of military spending, the withdrawal of troops from occupied territories, and that countries sign non-aggression treaties. So these are all calls which have to do with lowering this tension that exists, and with this habit, this historical process of using force as a way of resolving conflict. We're calling for a very different type of world, which is really calling for a profound change.
Now, obviously, you hope through this march to raise awareness about these areas of conflict and external conflict that we live through day to day in the world. What other things are you hoping to? I mean, let's face it. Nobody's going to stop the war. Iraq is not going to stop and go away. The occupation,
right.
The Congo is not going to stop and go away. Rwanda, the sieges that are going on, Gaza, the occupation of Palestine. These are not just going to stop. We've been trying to stop them for decades now. So outside of raising awareness, do you really believe that there is something substantial that's going to be gained from this kind of a united worldwide march?
Well, it's true. I agree that we're not going to be able to, through the march, change immediately the policy of government. But I believe that this type of a call among the people, this type of groundswell, of an expression of a human cry for a different type of world is something that has a lot of meaning and which ultimately does really change things, because we live in a world, as you're I think referring to, that involves political institutions and political relationships and all of those things, and it's true that we can't affect those directly, but those institutions and those relationships are also built on a whole system of values, of social, a kind of social awareness, a kind of social consciousness. And that, as that consciousness changes, those things also change. So that's what we're aiming for. In one sense, the aim of the march is, in that sense, somewhat humble. We're not saying we're going to end the wars with the march. But what we're doing, I believe, has a lot of meaning for this moment, particularly in raising awareness of the threat of nuclear weapons, and also has a lot of meaning for the future of humanity also.
Is there going to be some kind of census done at the culmination of the march that will help you to understand how many people were actually involved in the march? And the residual effects upon the people that are involved in this?
Right. It's a good question. I don't actually know if there are plans for a census of that type, but certainly I'm sure there will be a pretty detailed evaluation in terms of what types of events took place, what sort of presence there was in the media, to what extent there were connections with government, because there will be connections with government. The marchers are going to meet with, I think, at this point, four presidents of countries. They have a meeting with the Pope. So there are, those types of, let's say, higher-level institutional activities which the march is going to include. But what we're also really emphasizing a lot is the importance and the meaning that this march also lives in people's communities, in their neighborhoods, in their schools, in the places where they live, because this is the type of the question is, how do we reach those people that are not being reached with this message? And that's what I think is really interesting about this march, is that along with the high profile things of the heads of state, the movie stars and those people, Nobel laureates, it's very important, that level, and that level of support, but that at the same time there's something very grassroots and a kind of a connection that anyone can say, I can be part of this march by doing something very simple, by calling up my neighbors and inviting them to come to my home and tell them about the march. And this is something which is also very important.
Well, I absolutely believe that, and this is part of the reason we've been doing the show for the last 4 years, is to inspire this kind of activism, this kind of commitment to being active within one's community, whatever the activism is. You know, a lot of people will say, well, you know, I'm not really that passionate about politics. Well, you can be active in a million different ways.
Absolutely.
The world needs these grassroots kinds of operations. You know, there's a list here, and I'm going to read a couple of them. The president of Argentina, the president of Chile, the president of Croatia, the president of East Timor, the former U.S. president, Jimmy Carter, former president of Ireland, and on and on and on. But these presidencies, and the reason I mentioned the presidencies, leads me into my next question from one of our listeners. Mike in California asks, and I will give a continuation of that. Given the U.S.'s present status as an aggressor and invader in Iraq and its continuing occupation, do you feel that the World March support in the USA is hampered by this? In other words, would people feel awkward about supporting a march for peace when their own country is part of the problem in a big way?
Well, I'm not sure how people might feel. I think that we have all the more reason to support the march, because we are, as U.S. citizens, more responsible for the actions of our government than we are for those of other governments. And I agree that the United States policy is and has been aggressive, in Iraq and Afghanistan in many, many places and many ways. And if the people of the United States were to become engaged in such a way that policy shifted even more, that would have an enormous impact on the world, more so than probably any other country. So it's a fair question, and I think all the more reason to be involved.
Can I ask you, and the reason I mentioned all of the various presidents of different nations, do we have any, and we do have Jimmy Carter, who has always been a friend of peace and a friend of the end and cessation of nuclear weaponry. I know that for a fact. And ending occupations in various countries. But is our present administration, the Obama administration, committed in any way, shape, or form to this event?
Not yet. We certainly hope
Not yet.
we hope to be in communication with the administration.
Wonderful.
And you know, there is contact with a number of members of Congress who have endorsed the march. Dennis Kucinich, Maxine Walters just recently endorsed the march. And you know, the march is for everyone who wants this future. We're not asking where people come from. That doesn't. It's not a question of any kind of a litmus test to participate in this march. Republican, Democrat. Left, right, doesn't matter. What's important about the march is what is the future that we want to build together. And if you believe that future needs to be a future of nonviolence, then you can be part of the march. And I think that's very important because this is something which affects everyone in the world, these things. And it's something that everyone in the world can contribute to. I think that everywhere one looks, we see violence. It's not only occupations. It's not only the threat of nuclear weapons. It's also the rise of hate groups in the United States. It's also handguns. It's also the economic violence we see. These examples are everywhere, and it's almost as if everywhere you turn, you see violence, and everywhere you turn, you see a possible way that you see a possible project for the World March. Because these things are not so separate, I think. You know, the different types of violence connect with the thing that I was referring to earlier, which is a system of values, a way of looking at the world. And this is part of the conversation that we think it's very important to foment.
Wonderful. We have a caller on the line. Caller, your name, your first name, and your question for Mr. Chris Wells.
Are you talking to me?
Yes. Hi.
Oh, hi, I'm Cindy Sheehan. And I'm Martha's Vineyard.
Wow.
Hi, Cindy. It's great having you with us. I thought it was one of our listeners calling in. I knew you were going to call in, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
Hello, Cindy.
How are you doing?
Hi there. Good. We're doing good. We're trying to find a restaurant to go have dinner, so just driving around.
Well, you know,
right,
save a spot for me and Chris. We'll be there shortly.
Great. There's plenty of room.
Cindy, obviously you are involved in this wonderful march. Are you part of the organizational team, or are you just representing it as an affiliate? How are you involved in this?
In Martha's Vineyard?
No, in the march.
Which march?
The march for world peace and nonviolence.
Endorser.
Great. Well, I'm sure they really appreciate that. Let me ask you, Martha, are you currently trying to get some more support for your cause through the Obama administration? Answers about the war? Hello? We lost somebody. Hello, Chris?
No, I'm here.
Oh, I guess we lost Cindy. I wonder what's going on with that. Well, anyway, I'm sure she'll call back, and we'll have Cindy Sheehan on the show with us this evening as well. Let me ask you, as far as the march itself, you say that the march will be ending in 2:10. This is a continuous march. And is this going to be almost like a relay where people are handing off the baton of peace, so to speak, to another community, and they're picking it up?
Well, there is the what we're calling the base team, which a certain group of that, probably 10 or 15, 20 people maybe, will actually make the entire 99,000-mile journey from New Zealand to the Andes. It's really a pretty enormous feat if you think about it, just to travel continually, and that's what it's going to be for 3 months. And others will join that along the way, and then, you know, some will join for a piece of it, and then others will join for another piece of it. So there is some continuity to that. But really the march itself is that plus that's sort of like a core, a symbolic, a way of tying together this enormous variety of activities that are happening and initiatives. Extraordinary things from, you know, very simple things like two students in Dallas, Texas, who learned about the march online, high school students, and loved the idea. And they said, what we want to do is to try and see that every high school in the Dallas-Fort Worth area knows about this march and becomes part of it. So that's a very homegrown U.S. initiative. And there's also been wonderful things like just recently a team of mountain climbers from Spain and Turkey together climbed Mount Ararat put a banner of the World March on the top of this mountain, which has this...
Oh, wow, that's wonderful.
Symbolic. So there are poetic initiatives, there are very homegrown initiatives, there are going to be concerts, there are going to be marches, there are going to be, as I mentioned, meetings with heads of state, there are going to be candlelight vigils, there are going to be poetry meetings, there are going to be bike rides, every possible type of initiative that you can imagine. And even events which are already taking place can become part of the march in a very simple way. If someone were doing a play, let's say, about Afghanistan, about the occupation of Afghanistan, they could dedicate a performance to the World March and spread the word that way. So there's a million ways that the word can get out and a million different types of possibilities for how people can participate. And that's, of course, what we're trying to encourage is the greatest participation possible. Which reminds me, I should probably, if it's okay, announce the websites.
Oh, please do. As a matter of fact, I'm sorry, I should have done that myself.
That's
okay. Please go right ahead.
So that people know how to plug in, there's actually a U.S. website, which is worldmarchusa.net. And then there's also an international site, which is theworldmarch.org. And those two sites are also linked, so people can find their way around. I understand you have some also listeners in other parts of the world, and they can connect with the international website, which has an enormous variety of languages that the website is in. So it's very easy for people to plug in through those websites, endorse the march, learn about what's happening, get materials, see what sorts of initiatives are being done, and really include themselves and be part of the march.
Well, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating, and I would like you to kind of explain to us, is the interaction on the internet that is going to. There's going to be a virtual marching through the internet. Do you know how is this going to be done, and how are they going to, you know, get people involved in that?
Well, what I know is that the base team is going to include. A number of people that are going to be working on producing video, producing a lot of sort of materials, sort of daily press releases in a way, of the what's happening with that group and also with the march as a whole, and that those of course will be on the website. So there's going to be a lot of information available in real time during the 3 months from October 2nd to January 2nd. And, you know, the websites, of course, are also just a really key way for people to learn about the march and to become part of it. They're designed in order to make it easy for people to join the march rather than to just to receive information.
Let me ask you, I know that one of the, a lot of, there are so many different ways that this is being addressed. It's really quite unique. For instance, there's a World March presentation at a conference in Nagasaki. Now, obviously, I think anybody that knows, heard the name Nagasaki knows why they would be deeply attached to this this
That's
World
right.
March and the because here we have a country that is still reeling, literally reeling from the effects of a nuclear bomb that the United States kindly dropped on them. So we're talking about the worldwide eradication of nuclear weapons, and what better place than a conference at Nagasaki to have a World March presentation?
Yes, exactly, and in fact, that was part of a few days of activities, which included also a ceremony in Hiroshima, and there was a lovely initiative that's part of the march, which was sort of launched on that day, because in Hiroshima there is a flame which has been kept burning from the ashes of the explosion of the nuclear bomb there, and this is a kind of a shrine in a way, in Hiroshima. This flame is going to be kept burning until the day the nuclear weapons are eliminated from the face of the earth. And this flame, which is called the abolition flame, was taken in this ceremony in Hiroshima, and now is being brought to New Zealand for the beginning of the march, where the march is launched in Wellington, and is going to be carried by the marchers through the entire march. So the Abolition Flame, which was actually an initiative that that came separately from the march, has now become part of it. And that will make the trip all the way to the Andes, the end point in Punta de Vacas in the Andes Mountains. And then from there, we'll go to the Conference of the Non-Proliferation Treaty
at the UN in May, next in May of 2010. So this, of course, those places have an enormous meaning connected with the call of the march. In fact, on August 6th, there were events done in many places all over the world that were commemorating that day, commemorating, actually doesn't seem quite the right word, but remembering that day, and at the same time, as part of the World March, calling for the calling to make sure that that never happens again, that tragedy. That's the connection.
It's certainly amazing, I'll tell you that. And as I said, as I did my research and learned more and more about this, it's just profound how huge this thing is, and the potential that it has to grow and develop going to be astounding.
Yes, and it's really fantastic that you're helping to get the word out, because this is how it's going to grow, is that that people, in a way, take it in their own hands. Say, this march
is mine. Well, that's what we're here for, Chris. We're going to take a break right now for a minute,
okay.
And we'll be back in just a minute with our guest, Chris Wells. I believe Cindy Sheehan is also back with us.
Great.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us, but for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
It's called the Comfort Bike because that's what it feels like when you ride it. Comfortable. The Day 6 Comfort Bicycles produce ergonomic bikes that are the equivalent of a good ergonomic chair, allowing you a natural body position as you use it. With a fully adjustable backrest, wide seat, and a high handlebar design, the Day 6 bikes help you to rediscover the fun and freedom of riding. No hunching over, like when you ride a traditionally designed bike, no matter how fast you're going. Even mounting the bike is easy with a step-through designed frame. Please visit day6bicycles.com to see and learn more about this revolutionary design that is making bike riding a joy again for so many people.
Join the World March for Peace and Nonviolence, an international 3-month event spanning 7 continents, and over 1 million participants. With endorsements from luminaries worldwide such as President Jimmy Carter, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. The World March for Peace and Nonviolence seeks to bring attention to the need to end war and occupation, reduce arms spending, and all forms of violence. Please visit theworldmarch.org.
In our Constitution, the Founding Fathers laid a path to an economy that should have kept Americans free and prosperous. How we the people were tricked off that path into a world of debt and deception reads like one of the great mystery novels of all time. American Free Press compares author Ellen Brown's new book, Web of Debt, to an eye-opening thriller that will leave you feeling like Neo in The Matrix. In Web of Debt, the mysterious and often shocking origins of today's ultimate financial crisis are exposed, starting with its distant beginnings to its present disastrous climax as the reader is shown that the way to restore America's true wealth has been with us all along. Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, to see how America's money and future can become by and for the people once again.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We welcome Chris Wells of the World March for Peace and Nonviolence. Chris, it's just really a pleasure. You're just a wealth of information on this subject. We do have a question from the gentleman who we are dedicating this show to today, John from the Canadian Rockies. And his question to Chris is, Don Quixote taught us to dream the impossible dream. Thank you for your part in keeping the dream alive. I have launched Dusty Sneakers for Peace and Nonviolence to enable school children of the world to be involved. The website is dustysneakers@worldmarch.ca. The children of the world are the first victims of war and have an essential role to play in its elimination. What other events involve children's involvement?
Well, I thank you for also for your part, John, in spreading this dream and adding to it. Dusty Sneakers is a wonderful initiative, and I know in New York there's going to be nonviolence curriculums in schools, and this seems to be something which is really gaining the interest of a lot of different people in different parts of the world. And so because of that, a conversation developed among some of the organizers that it would be great to develop a curriculum to teach students about nonviolence, and to do it for different age levels. So from kindergarten all the way through university level, to put together a curriculum of what sort of things could be studied to learn about the history of nonviolence, how nonviolence applies in today's world. And this is something which has been put together, and now there's interest in a number of schools in New York to have that curriculum taught during the 3 months of the march. Also recently there was the march was endorsed by the teachers union in the United Kingdom.
In the United Kingdom, yeah, NUT.
Right. And they also are developing, I believe, those types of initiatives to bring the message of the World March into schools and nonviolence in general. Those are specific instances that I know of, and I imagine there are others too. Well, also the high school students in Dallas, which who latched onto the idea themselves and decided to develop their own initiative. So, just remembering another one that was recently, I believe, in South America, an event done where a lot of children made some cranes, I think, out of origami. Those types of events are happening all over the place. It's wonderful.
There are also some of the things that I really enjoyed reading about is some of the ways that there's actually an internet World March online auction. And the interesting thing about this auction is a lot of the works of art through many artists in New Zealand are online in order and for auction to bidders. And the bidding is already on the way. So for those of you that are interested, I know you have, if you go to the worldmarch.org site, you'll find, under New Zealand, under the category New Zealand, you'll find where the bidding is, and you can, actually join an online auction for artwork that's going to be donated, and the funds are going to be used towards, the march itself. So that's something that I thought was really a very unique. I mean, you know, how many times have we? I'm currently involved in a fundraising auction. We're doing a Margaritaville. It's going to be a lot of fun. But we are currently, and this is in order to support our local community. And these are great things. And here, you know, here's this internet auction that is, you know, benefiting this march. And I think it's just such a unique way to use the internet. And one of the other things that
No, I was just going to say there's been a really phenomenal creativity in New Zealand, which is the launching place of the march. It's going to be launched in Wellington, which is the capital of the country, and there they have a statue of Gandhi, and that's the day that's Gandhi's birthday, October 2nd, which is the International Day of Nonviolence, as declared by the UN. And New Zealand is a very interesting, very fitting place for the march to begin. It's, the country was rated as the most peaceful country on earth, this year.
Wonderful.
A study which really studied many aspects of the society. You know, it wasn't, like something in a magazine or, I mean, it was really, a serious thing. And, you know, was the first country to grant, women's suffrage and, has a very, very strong history of nonviolence and also, of resistance to nuclear weapons, and is part of a nuclear-free zone. And they've also involved the Maori people, the indigenous community there, in a very interesting way. And in one of the first events of the march is going to be a sunrise ceremony in the Chatham Islands, which are the easternmost point of New Zealand, and one of the easternmost points, if you start at the international dateline, on the planet. So one of the first places for the rays of the morning sun are there, and there's going to be a sunrise ceremony conducted by the elders of the Maori people to bless the march.
Wow.
So they're beautiful, beautiful events being planned.
Some of these events are really, you know, just awe-inspiring, really, as I've read about them.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just, you know, it's important that people understand the power that this has universally. It's amazing. I think it was the Dalai Lama that, one of the Nanandas of the Buddhist world that once said that once a quarter of the world unified together, meditating on one cause would cause a paradigm shift. And I've always been inspired by that thought, and this is a great way to really get a lot of people involved.
You know, that's the word that Miguel Descoto at the UN used about the march. He called it a paradigm shift for the 21st century. He also... he's the president of the General Assembly of the UN, very strongly supported the march's call for, as he called it, zero tolerance for nuclear weapons.
Absolutely. I agree 100%
yeah.
on that. It has to be zero tolerance. Here we are in a world that we have enough nuclear weaponry to probably blow our entire solar system out of the universe. And so what are we doing now? Now we've reached out into space with nuclear power. I mean, how many ways do we have to annihilate ourselves?
That's
I mean, it's profound when you think about it. Another fascinating, again, this march is so unique in this. There's such diversity. It is open to so many genres that, you know, it would be a crime for anybody to say that I don't know how to help, because in every way you can help. There's a million different ways. One of the things that I really love, and this is going to be, I think, really huge, because I've always read, you know, as a Palestinian, for me, one of my Palestinian friends once told me, he was a writer, and he said that anything that is not written is lost, and anything that is not written in film can also be lost. And one of the interesting and fascinating things about this is all throughout the entire march, there are going to be filmmakers from different parts of the world that are going to be filming the marches as they go. And at the end of it, they're going to somehow put this all together and corral it into some kind of into a documentary that embraces all aspects of this incredible march. The Syrian filmmaker Maher al-Sabah will be giving shape via the Muslim vision of nonviolence. There's going to be Eduardo Ghazali, also of the Middle East, going through Alexandria and Egypt and forming a group of directors in Turkey. Julia Vargas is coordinating different artists, and she'll be filming simultaneously in Bolivia. And at the end, presented in a documentary. I just think that's just amazing.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's the creativity and the types of expression that are arising are really something. And it's, I think, a testament to both how needed this type of initiative is, and also to how inspiring the idea is of bringing together all of the voices on the entire planet. So it's a human voice we're talking about. This is something which is not having to do with any particular culture, any particular religion, any particular age group. It's a call of humanity. And I think that the vast majority of humanity is tired of war, is tired of this endless cycle of violence which doesn't lead to anything except more violence, and is calling out for a different world. And that, I believe, is something that has great power. And when people capture that power, they become enormously creative, strangely enough. And all of these wonderful initiatives come out. I just wanted to go back for one moment to the issue of the nuclear weapons in this particular moment, because I think it's important to understand that, you know, this is a moment of great urgency, because the technology is proliferating and spreading really in a way that's quite out of control. And as you were saying, we have the firepower to destroy the planet many times over and literally, create the fact that humankind is extinct, and also more limited, let's say, threats of a large number of weapons that are on what's called hair trigger alert, which is an automatic launch status. They're launched very quickly, with a very short window of opportunity for them to be recalled by human intervention. So we have these kinds of very dangerous situations, really deeply dangerous. At the same time, it's a very interesting moment, a kind of window of opportunity that exists right now, because the Obama administration has taken a very different approach to this than the previous administration. Obama's speech in Prague changed the international tone dramatically when he called for the abolition of nuclear weapons and acknowledged the responsibility of the United States to lead in that effort. And then followed it up with making overtures to begin talks with Russia, and this has changed things a lot. And there is a really, I think, a pretty widely held sense among those who specialize in the non-proliferation treaties and those types of conversations at the international level. But there's a moment of opportunity here that we mustn't lose. And there's interest in it that one sees in many different ways, but at the same time, it's very, very important that there's a decisive push coming from the people, because the leaders can't do it by themselves. Obama has done interesting things. He's taken an interesting lead on this, but he needs the support of the people, because, of course, there are strong forces lined up on the other side as well.
Well, I have a feeling, Chris, once this march has reached its height and culmination, that a lot of people are going to be paying it a lot of attention. I don't think they can avoid that. Now, we only have a brief minute, but we have one more question. Angie in Florida asks, what made Chris become a humanist?
What made me become a humanist? I was at a moment in my life when I was looking for something new. I had kind of reached the end of one stage, and I felt kind of like, well, two things are bothering me. One is that I'm really, really, really worried about what's happening in the world, and the other is that I feel sort of like that I need a new direction in my own life in order to feel coherent, to feel like I'm doing the right thing with my life. That's what made me become a humanist, that I thought it matters what happens in the world. That matters to me. And what I do in the world matters.
It absolutely does, Chris. Unfortunately, we've got to end now. One more statement from John Grogan, a Canadian organizer. Like Horton, here's a who. All the voices are needed to be heard. A person's a person, no matter how small. So all of your voices, please go out and support this march. Support the people of the world in their endeavor to end violence and to end wars. Thank you very much, Chris. It's been an honor having you. We wish you luck,
and
we'll be following this. And perhaps after this is all over, we can get together again and, you know, talk about certain things that happened during the march. We'd really like to kind of keep that going, that movement going.
I would be very happy to do that, and thank you so much for helping to let people know about this.
Great, thank you. Next week, Manny Bedillo, an NYC CAN organizer for the 9/11 investigation on the ballot, will be the guest. That's Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, September 1st, and you can join us on the People Speak radio show and social issues. Have a great evening, everybody. Good luck with the march. Good luck. Thank you, John Grogan, for bringing this to the world's attention. Thank you, Chris, for bringing it to the world's attention. Be well and be successful.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is mine, land from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you.